Hey, this is Matt Hawkins, and you're listening to the Top Cow Chronology Project.
Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Presents the Top Cow Chronology Project. I'm your host, Jace, along with my co-hosts, Manny and Jaden.
Hey.
In this episode, we're going to be covering The Darkness, Close Your Eyes, a one-shot released in June 2014 by Top Cow Productions. Being that it's relatively recent, you can find it on eBay relatively easily, pretty much for cover price, which is $2.99, plus shipping, maybe a little less. It's also available on Comixology. Being that it's so recent, it hasn't really been collected anywhere yet, at least not that I could find. And for those of you not familiar with the Top Cow Chronology Project, we are reading all the comics in the Top Cow Artifact universe in historical order. So the first books take place in ancient times, moving on up into modern times. Now, none of your three hosts here have read any of these comics before, so we're basically reading the book and then giving you our initial impressions as it's fresh in our minds. And if you want to take a look at the chronology, you can go to our website, thecomicsourceblog.com. Go to the podcast page. You'll see off to the right there's a Comic Vine logo. If you click on that, that'll take you directly to the Comic Vine website where there is the chronology that we're using. And that was put together by a Comic Vine user who goes by the name of Condor, so we thank him for his hard work. And before we give our initial thoughts on the book, let me give you a creator lineup here. This book was written by Eilish Kott. The art was by Marek Oleksicki. Colors were Sloan Leong, and letters by the great Troy Pateri. So, Manny, what did you think of The Darkness, Close Your Eyes?
Well, you know, anytime we've been looking into the darkness, usually it's somebody really, really out and very obvious that they're out for revenge. Or they're out to get something back that they've lost, and then they find in, you know, the darkness, you know, with whoever it is in that time period. And this one was a little different. This one, it seemed like, in my opinion, that, you know, the darkness was already in our main character. What's his name? Estacado.
Yeah, Adelmo Estacado.
There we go. And, you know, you have that kind of yin and yang dynamic between him and Emma. And it really made for an interesting story, and it was quite different than some a lot of the other darkness that we've read. But at the same time, like, I could really, you know, tell that, you know, there was something there inside of him already that, you know, it just needed to be exposed.
Jaden, what did you think?
Overall, I really liked it. I've read a lot of one-shots that really felt like either rushed or unfinished, and this one definitely feels like you get a good full story in there, and it's a different take on the darkness. You don't really see the darkness in its normal form here. It's kind of more of an internal struggle with Adelmo Estacado.
So, but overall, you liked it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. It was interesting. It wasn't until after I read it, you mentioned that, you know, we don't actually see the darkness. You know, every other time we've seen him, it's, you know, this guy, and he's got the manifestation, you know, long hair and, you know, face totally covered in darkness, maybe some glowing white or yellow eyes. You know, we've seen several with billowing cloaks or capes or something where they open the capes and out come all these demons. There's none of that here. You know, it's a coming-of-age tale in a way, but with definitely an edge to it. And I agree with you as far as the amount of story. I mean, we've read a lot of these historic tales of the darkness and the Witchblade and some with Magdalena, and some of them have
been very short reads or just didn't feel like there was much substance. This felt like it was a lot of meat on this story, a lot of meat on the bone, so to speak. There was a lot to it. And, you know, partway through, I was like, wow, is this, you know, more than the typical, you know, 22-page comic? And it's not. It's not. But it just, it's the storytelling, both in the art and the exposition. There's a lot of kind of like self-narration from Adelmo that are in these dialogue boxes, these caption boxes, which they used to, a lot of comics back in the 80s used to, invariably, they had the caption boxes with a lot of exposition, and I think that led to a lot of the, I don't know, meat of the stories back then, too. You know, I've gone on record before as saying these older comics, it takes you a lot longer to read them, and a lot of it is because there's that much more to read with these dialogue boxes, caption boxes, whatever you want to say. And nowadays, that's almost unheard of. You know, you get the storytelling from the pictures, you get the storytelling from the dialogue of the characters, and that's basically it. You know, you might get one little caption box at the beginning of the story or to, you know, tell you the location and the year, maybe. Or sometimes it'll be as simple as a box that says, now. You know, or the first couple pages will have a box that says 1986, for example, and you'll read something that happened years ago. And when you're done with those first couple pages, then they'll say now. So you realize that, you know, you've jumped forward. But, I mean, two words, basically. But this story is narrated by Adelmo. But that being said, I think part of the reason that there is not as much dialogue now is there is more focus on art currently. And I think these things are kind of cyclical. We may see more storytelling, more dialogue, more exposition come back into stories. I don't know, but a lot of times you go back and read some of those old comics from the 80s, and what the box is telling you is the same thing you're seeing in the pictures. And so I feel like it's kind of gotten away from that, and they just kind of want you to focus on the picture and not, you know, you don't necessarily need to see it in the picture and be told also. But that being said, this isn't necessarily that kind of thing. Adelmo's narration certainly doesn't, it's not repetitive. You know, he's telling us more of his backstory while we're looking at this art that's telling us a story, kind of setting the mood. So I enjoyed it. It was very good. What'd you guys think about the art?
I'm not a huge fan of it, but I think it really fits this book really well, so I don't mind it that bad.
You know, I didn't really have too much to say about the artwork. I mean, it's a little bit dark. But, you know, it, like Jaden said, it fits the story. And, you know, the scenes where him and his stepdad are kind of fighting, that got really messy. So, you know, not too much to say about it. But, you know, it fit.
All right, well, let me give a brief synopsis of the book, and then maybe we'll have more to say about both the story and the art. So it's a very striking cover. We see a hand that's got some kind of blackness kind of wrapped around it. Looks like maybe some kind of black liquid running off it. Dark, definitely dark in color, whereas the background is kind of this bright orange color. So it's a very striking cover. We see on the first page Adelmo sitting on his bed. And as I said, he's kind of narrating it himself. He says in 3 days he'll be 21 years old. But he may not live long enough to reach that age. And then we see someone call from off-panel, "Where are you? Come feed your mother. It won't feed itself." And we learn that it's California, March of 1912. Apparently Adelmo was looking at a picture of a young woman. Sticks the picture in the book and walks out. And we see a man sitting at the table. Definitely not a handsome man. Not clean shaven. He's got a bottle of some kind of alcohol next to him. Caption reads, "This is not my real father. My real father raped my mother and cut his name into her chest with a piece of glass before dying while he was still inside of her." So we know that Adelmo was kind of born in violence, I guess you could say. And then we see that a picture of his mother, her face kind of looks misshapen. The caption reads, "My mother got better. Then she met Julian. Somehow she fell in love with him, or that's what she believed. But one day Jillian slammed her head against the door too hard. And so basically she's kind of a vegetable now. She can't really do much. And Jillian, certainly her husband, Adelmo's stepfather, is certainly not going to take care of her. So it falls to Adelmo to feed her and make sure she gets bathed and such.
And then one interesting narration. The one little interesting narration that'll come back later, Adelmo says that the best piece of advice his stepfather ever gave him was to close your eyes, it'll hurt less. The next page we see Adelmo. He's pushing a wheelbarrow stacked with some heavy wood. He says he works the rig 6 days a week, 14 hours a day, and we see these oil rigs in the background. He says he makes real money, he gets a meal. The money takes care of the family, the meal takes care of him.
And he says his boss, Martin Case, is a fair man. He owns the rigs, he finds oil, builds the rigs, then he sells them and moves on. One day soon, his daughter Emma is going to become my wife. In the next panel, we see Adelmo laying next to Emma. She's asking if her father's gone. And Adelmo says, yes, he's not going to find out, not yet. Emma says she'd like him to know, and Adelmo says, me too. And Emma asks, are you afraid of my father knowing? And Adelmo answers, yes. And Emma says, don't be, if he forbids me, we'll run away. We see Adelmo's thoughts. He's afraid that she's lying, that she won't really run away with him, but Emma's never lied to him. The next page, we see Martin Case talking to Adelmo, talking about the plains, how they're poetry. And then on the next page, Adelmo, we see him kind of getting angry, and he's talking about how his true father raped his mother because she was a whore, and they call him a bastard.
But
the boy that ridiculed him, his voice slides away as Adelmo hits him in the face with a stone.
He says he's quiet now, except for the wet, hard squeals of a stuck pig. Adelmo says, I hit him again. I realize I'm smiling. I laugh, and it hurts my neck. It hurts like a big chunk of metal I can't spit out. It's blocking everything. Why do men like to call women whores? He thinks of Emma. He thinks there's a darkness inside of me that's alive. And then he wakes up.
Walks out to the kitchen. Sees his stepfather pass out on the table in a pool of vomit. Says he spent the money again, drank straight through it.
But Adelmo saves half the money under his body every night so he can buy meat. And he goes out to their garden, sees that half the potatoes are going bad, they're rotting, but there's no rain. How can potatoes rot without rain? But it's Sunday, and Emma manages to avoid her father, and they meet in their garden as usual.
Emma tells Adelmo that she loves the way he smells, earth and sweat and oil and soap.
And then we see that he comes home later than usual from meeting Emma,
and his stepfather throws a punch and kicks his face. Adelmo can smell his breath, cheap whiskey and sour guts. He thinks about killing his stepfather again, but he doesn't want to be like his father. He had told Emma about what her father told me about the plains being poetry, and she promises to bring him a book the next day.
The next day, new men have arrived, and one of them looks familiar. It's Adelmo's birthday. It's his 21st.
One of the new men makes a mistake. Here they are drilling for oil, and he's lighting a cigarette. Adelmo says, first the gas, the sound of a train approaching, and then everything is washed black as we see the oil come up from the ground, and then the gas ignites. Many of the men are burned, and Adelmo says, I realize where I know that man from. It's the man from my dream. And now I know what the plains are. I see it in my heart of hearts. Poetry, he says, as he sees the three men burning, the oil derricks burning. The next page, we see Martin Case is speaking to Adelmo. He says that it wasn't Adelmo's fault. It wasn't his mistake, and that's not the reason. The money is the least I can do. You've proven to be a worthy worker and a respectable young man. And we see that Adelmo's being offered $500 to leave the city and never come back. Martin Case goes on to say, I hope you understand there's no way you ever possibly can marry Emma. He says, I understand it's unfair, but I know you would be the death of her.
Adelmo says, I'm not my father. And Martin Case responds that he knows, but some things don't change, at least not enough in one generation. Believe me, I would know. But Adelmo refuses. He goes back home. Emma's soon to arrive there. If she can manage to avoid her father, he needs to feed his mother and wash himself. But as he arrives, their cabin, their shack's on fire. Stepfather's kneeling in front of it. And as he turns to see Adelmo approaching, Adelmo kicks him in the face. And that's it. Adelmo's lost it. He chokes his stepfather. They fight. That's a very brutal scene. His stepfather bites Adelmo's lip. Adelmo tears a chunk out of his cheek with his teeth. And then basically gouges his eyes out, sticks his thumbs all the way up into his stepfather's brain, just as Emma arrives questioning Adelmo, and they kiss. She mentions her Uncle Edgar. She says that he's strange, you'll like him, and so they run off. They discover an empty barn 10 miles away. They do their best to get some rest and hide for a while, but neither of them can fall asleep. They have no regrets about running away, and they decide to finally consummate their relationship, and as they start, Adelmo says that for a moment he sees something else, not Emma. He sees pain, he sees events that he doesn't want to take place, and he wants to close his eyes, but she asks him to look into her eyes instead, and he says Emma is right, it doesn't hurt at all. And then the final panel of the story, we see just black with some white type. It says, Adelmo Estacado became 21 that night. He left this world upon impregnating Emma Case. Emma Case took her last breath 9 months later while giving birth to their boy. Adelmo Estacado and Emma Case died happy. And that's it. That's the story. So we've learned... In the past, that the darkness has passed on from father to son, I guess now we know how.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's kind of cool the fact that they gave you a little bit of closure of that last panel where they tell you what happened to both of them, like, later, even though it's not actually that much later. I feel like it really puts a nice end cap on the story.
Yeah, very interesting. It's not what you would say a happy ending. It's definitely a dark tale. But, you know, that last line, they both died happy, you know, very interesting. Another thing I find interesting is that, okay, so we must know that, the main character, Adelmo Estacado, so that's his true father. We don't know if his true father was married to his mother or not, but obviously they knew who he was because Adelmo's got his last name, which I find interesting. You know, I don't know that there's many children of rape that would take their father's last name. But for whatever reason, you know, I mean, I understand why they did it for the story, so that we know he's an Estacado. It's passed from father to son. So apparently once a member of the Estacado clan or, you know, one of these male Estacados, you know, has sex or however you want to put it, apparently the darkness goes out of them and into the new child. The child that's been conceived, and they can no longer live without that darkness. But another interesting, something that's different between Adelmo's mom and Emma Case is Emma Case died during the childbirth. Adelmo's mother didn't.
Yeah.
And said that she, you know, she got better. So, you know, maybe it's just a matter of the mother doesn't always die. Maybe the fact that Emma Case died in childbirth didn't have anything to do with the fact that it was a darkness child she was bearing, maybe just had to do with the fact that, you know, it was the early 1900s and medical care wasn't that great. But we've definitely learned some more. As I said, we didn't actually see the darkness in the story like we've seen it in the past. Certainly a dark story. And that line where Adelmo is, you know, dreaming, he's waking up from that dream, he says he feels something in his throat, that hot metal he can't get out. You know, we know that's got to be the darkness.
Yeah, but I'm curious on, like, page 20, when he's all covered, it looks like he's covered in blood, but also, do you think that might also be the darkness? Because it looks like it's all over him.
Yeah, it could be, where he's fighting with his father, his stepfather, yeah. I should say. Yeah, you wonder about that. I wonder about that on the cover, too. You know, it's that whole
kind of double meaning behind everything. You know, Emma tells him that he smells like earth and oil, You know, is that really the oil and the earth because of his job, or is she smelling the darkness? Again, go back to that image on the cover with that hand. Is it oil on the hand, or is it the darkness? You know, perhaps it's both. So same kind of thing. You know, we're seeing him. He's just come home from work. He says he needs to bathe. You know, he's coming from work. You know, we know that they discovered oil that day. It was the big accident. You know, the oil whooshed up out of the ground. The gas ignited.
Yeah.
The three new guys got burned. So he's got to have oil, you know, all over him. You know, this sludge, this, you know, raw oil. And so, yeah, you wonder, is it the darkness manifesting, you know, out of him? Or is it blood? I mean, you can see some of its blood, you know, on his hands. Is it oil? Is it the darkness? We're meant to think it's all three, perhaps.
Yeah. Kind of give the reader a little bit more of a creative, like, imagination type feeling.
Yeah, and another thing I want to mention, okay, so they start this battle on page 17, and they fight for all the way up through page 20.
So three full pages with some, you know, pretty big-sized panels. There's no dialogue. There's no exposition. There's no words of any kind on three full pages out of a 20-page comic story. But yet I still felt like I got, you know, a lot of meat on the story. So I think that's saying something as far as what great storytelling it is, that you still feel like you're getting a good, solid story, and there's a lot of good characterization and a lot of, you know, depth. When you've got three...
when you've got three of the pages that don't even have any dialogue.
Yeah, but those pages really don't need them. I mean, the storytelling between the panels and the art, just, it's all you need. It's really good.
Yeah, another thing I'll say about the art is the color. The entire book is very muted, and it really suits the book well.
A lot of browns and grays and greens. No real bright colors. I think the brightest color in the whole book is probably some of the orange that we see on the cover, and then of course the both fires. We've got some bright orange on just those couple pages.
Yeah, I feel like the artist really wanted to make it feel like, will accentuate the things that he makes really bright.
Yeah, it also helps to give it kind of an older feel, you know, kind of like when you see photographs and there's a sepia tone, that brownish tone.
Yeah.
Kind of dates them, you know, makes them seem like they're old, whether they are or not. So I feel like that's part of it as well. You've been pretty quiet over there, Manny. Anything to add?
Yeah, I find it interesting at the end of the fight between his father-in-law and him, how Emma's not really...
Stepdad.
Doesn't seem
his stepdad.
Oh yeah, the stepdad. I'm sorry. Yeah. She doesn't seem very surprised, shocked, or anything by, you know, what's in front of her. So I'm wondering if there's a little bit more to her than meets the eye, than the, you know, the good girl that she's portrayed to be in the first few pages.
Yeah, you know, I thought about that as well, and then I thought, well, as close as they are, I'm sure she knows. Adelmo's probably, you know, cried on her shoulder and confided in her, you know, before about what a bastard his stepfather is, basically, you know, what a worthless piece of crap he is. So I have a feeling that she's not surprised, and although I do, you know, I will admit that she, they must have a very strong bond, you know, a very strong bond of love, because she doesn't hesitate. She's not... You know, she walks upon him as he's just killed this guy, but she's not, for one second, is she worried for her own safety. So,
yeah, and then...
Also, maybe she saw that the house was on fire and kind of assumed that it was his stepfather.
That it finally killed the mother?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that could have been fleshed. It could have been as simple as one sentence that would have, you know, gave us a little better understanding of what she was thinking.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it was necessarily needed. I think we can kind of infer that, you know, as close as these two are, the fact that she would leave with him with nothing, I mean, just the clothes on their back, you know, obviously she cares for him deeply and they have quite a bond. But yeah, it is an interesting point you raised if there's something more to her. I mean, clearly, I mean, she even says that she's got an uncle that's strange and, you know, they'll like each other. So she knows there's something about Adelmo that's not quite normal. She's got a sense, you know, something that about him is different, you know, this dark, not necessarily that it's this darkness inside of him, but something that's different.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah. she wouldn't mention, you know, oh, my uncle's strange, you'd like him, or he'll like you, or whatever, you know. It's almost like a throwaway line, but it gives you, you know, a little bit of insight. What'd you guys think about the whole cyclical thing with, at the beginning, he mentions how his stepdad, when he was beating him, used to say, close your eyes, it won't hurt so bad. And then at the end, Emma, you know, he goes to close his eyes as he goes inside her, and she says, keep your eyes open. And he says, oh, she's right, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't hurt that bad. It's not as bad as I expected. Kind of some, I don't know, poetry to that, I suppose.
Yeah. I feel like it's just they wanted to put a really good end to the story, and it kind of ties it all together, being a one-shot.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the name of the book, you know, close your eyes. But he dies, you know, with his eyes open. So, yeah, a good story. And two things that stuck with me the most interesting is how much depth there is to the story, both in background and characterization, when there is so little dialogue in the book. Especially, like I said, with those three pages that have none whatsoever. So that stuck with me. And the other thing that stuck with me is the fact that if you take the cover off this book and you give it to somebody and they don't know anything about the darkness, they would have no idea that Adelmo Estacado was in possession of the darkness artifact.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm sure most people, when they read it, they may, depending on who they are, but they may perceive that, you know, there's something off with that guy. And then, you know, to explain it to them, then they go, oh, that's it.
Yeah, they might think, oh, it's something off. They might just, you know, I think for some people it might, you know, go right over their head. But if they're not familiar with the darkness, you know, this is just a dark tale of the, you know, the Old West, so to speak. You know, kind of like star-crossed lovers, Romeo, Juliet kind of thing. You know, if they're not familiar with the darkness. Because, like, I mean, there's nothing inherently supernatural, you know, if you just read it and you're not familiar with the darkness, you don't know that it's a darkness tale or what have you, you might just think when he's talking about that, something hot stuck in his throat or whatever, he can't get out, they might just think it's his, like, anger. It's like a metaphor for his anger or the pain that's inside of him. Coming from being a child of rape and having to deal with his stepfather, or having, you know, turned his mother into a vegetable and being poor and people looking down on him because he's a bastard and, you know, not being able to be with the woman he loves, you know, all that stuff could be inside of him as this quote-unquote darkness rather than an actual supernatural manifestation of darkness. You know what I'm saying? That's what I find interesting. You know, that there's no, you know, appearance of some supernatural superhero-like or anti-hero character like we've seen in other darkness tales. I mean, contrast it to the, you know, the book we did right before this, Darkness, Shadows, and Flames. Though, I mean, you couldn't get two more opposite representations of the darkness, you know. Like that guy that carried the darkness turned into this giant, you know, Lovecraftian monster from the pit. And, you know, this guy, you don't see any of that. He just looks like a regular guy with maybe some oil and dirt on him.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder if he would have ended up physically manifesting it at any point, or if he would kind of holding it in.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the fact that the story starts out talking about his 21st birthday, I mean, we haven't got to that point because we haven't read the first published issues of The Darkness yet, but perhaps that's the age when the darkness starts to manifest itself. So it may have been that if he hadn't consummated his relationship with Emma at night of his 21st birthday, then maybe he would have started manifesting the darkness powers. He would have been able to summon the demons and such, you know, if he'd lived longer. But being that he didn't, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, really interesting take.
Yeah, it probably my favorite Darkness story we've read so far. And, you know, we learned a little bit about the Darkness itself, and it definitely makes me anxious to learn more. All right, anything else we want to add, guys?
No, I think that's about it.
You guys touched upon, I was just kind of thinking about it, you know, because how Emma died while giving birth, and how Esakao's mom didn't. You think maybe it had to do something with the way that that both of the kids were conceived? I mean, when his mom was giving birth, I mean, it was rape, it was violent. She there was blood. I mean, he died. And then, meanwhile, in contrast with Emma, it was, you know, kind of like the fairy tale ending. So, you know, his mom lived, but she was definitely not, obviously not the same. And in a matter of fact, just went into another bad relationship. Well, meanwhile, Emma, she maybe there's too much light in her. I don't know.
Their relationship might have been a little bit more of a brighter, like, light and too good for the darkness. So, but even when his mom got raped and she gave birth, it wasn't willing and it wasn't a good, like, it wasn't love. But because it was love, maybe the darkness kind of punished her because she was too good.
Yeah, that's one we could look at it that way. I mean, you almost think it would be the opposite, right? Like, Adelmo's mom got raped, it was violent, whatever, she would have been the one that died, but Emma would have lived because, yeah, they did have that love. And just from the story, kind of get the idea that they weren't married, you know, Adelmo's true father and mother weren't married. Again, I wonder, just because he has the last name. But the other thing that we certainly don't know is how old Adelmo's true father was. Maybe he was older. Maybe he had a little more control. And so he was able to, I don't know, maybe hold back a little bit of the darkness. Maybe that's why Adelmo hasn't manifested any power yet. Whereas Adelmo doesn't even really understand that he's in possession of this darkness power. And so when he consummates his relationship with Emma, he gives it all. And so perhaps that may be why, you know, she's got more of the darkness, quote unquote, inside of her. Because he, you know, let it all hang out, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no real way to know, I guess, unless we were to speak to Ailish Khaad about it. And honestly, he'd probably be like, I never really thought about it. That is the one thing that's very interesting to me, though. Because it's the big difference between the two situations. You know, Adelmo's mom lived. You know, granted, she obviously was hurt because it said she got better, you know, until his...
Yeah.
That Julian, the stepfather, beat the crap out of her, knocked her head into the doorway too hard or whatever it was. But she got better. Emma, you know, we know nothing more than she died. But she died happy. So. Took her last breath 9 months later, giving birth to their boy. So. Yeah, a very interesting book. Obviously worth reading. I think we'd all recommend it. I mean, just the fact that it's a 20-page book, and we've been talking about it this long, really shows the quality of the story, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep, good read.
All right, and as I mentioned, the best place to find it, Comixology, if you'd like a digital copy. It's not that old, only about a year old. You can probably find a copy down at your local comic shop or eBay. The next books we're going to be covering are Tomb Raider books. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with Tomb Raider as a video game. Well, Top Cow had the license for Tomb Raider way back in the late 90s, mid to late 90s. I believe that license has since passed on to Dark Horse. So they're not necessarily in canon anymore. However, they were back in the day, and they certainly, Laura Croft and Sarah Pizzini certainly crossed over a lot in the early days. They're in Condor's chronology, so... We're using that chronology, so we're going to go in and cover the Tomb Raider books. I'm pretty excited to read them myself. The art looks outstanding.
So the first book we're going to cover is Tomb Raider 0.5 or Tomb Raider Half. And then we're going to go into the Tomb Raider Journey 12-issue limited series. So because Top Cow doesn't hold the license to Tomb Raider, any trade paperbacks they had of those books are obviously no longer in print. But they did make some trade paperbacks of the regular Tomb Raider, not the Tomb Raider Journeys. So you can find Tomb Raider Half in trade paperback form. Or, again, you can find these books on eBay. They're really inexpensive, especially some of these Tomb Raider Journeys books. As I said, there's 12 issues. There's a lot of them that have variant covers by Adam Hughes, so you would think they'd be really expensive, but they're like maybe $2 or $3 a piece. And, you know, for an Adam Hughes cover, I mean, right now I'm looking at the cover to issue one. It's so detailed and so well done. It looks like a photograph. So good. So get your hands on some Tomb Raider and follow along with us here on the Top Cow Chronology Project and some upcoming episodes. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us, as I mentioned, you can go to our website, thecomicsourceblog.com. You can also find episodes of my YouTube show there. You can read reviews on Manny's blog. You can also check out our sketch gallery. And you can contact us directly through that page with the Contact Us link. You can comment on episodes directly on the individual threads for those episodes. If you'd like to follow us on Facebook, just do a search for The Comic Source. That's us. I'm always putting pictures up when I'm at shows or covering shows, creator interviews, free comic book day, things like that. And you follow us on Facebook, you're going to know right away when a new episode comes up. It's the first place I go. I also will let you know on Twitter. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, it's twitter.com/thecomicsource. Communicate with a lot of comic book creators there, so feel free to join in the conversation. If you'd like to send us an email directly, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. Coming up very soon, here in about 2 weeks, is the big San Diego Comic-Con, San Diego, California. Jaden and I will be attending. We'll have lots of coverage from the show on our Comic Source podcast, and maybe even some new sketches for the sketch gallery. And in preparation for that show, we'll be doing kind of a frequently asked questions episode on the podcast coming up real soon here, just to kind of give an idea if you've never been to the show before. If you just kind of want to know what it's all about, if you're curious, if you have questions you'd like answered, be sure and email those in and we'll answer them on the show. So once again, I want to thank everybody for joining us, and be sure and read Tomb Raider Half, the book we'll be covering next time. We'll talk to you then.
Later.